Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky of Break of Day Capital. I talk to leading experts to discuss a wide range of subjects to educate investors on best-in-class practices to build legacy wealth and positively impact communities. Let's jump in. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky with Break of Day Capital. Be sure to join our Facebook group, Asset Management Mastery, where we have a great community of thousands of like-minded individuals sharing resources and best practices.
Choosing the right insurance coverage for multifamily properties isn't that complicated, if you know who to talk to. At the Garzella Group, we're uniquely qualified to help you navigate the range of policy choices you have, and we're committed to saving you 30% in the process. We do intensive market research and have nationwide relationships, so we can find coverage other insurance brokers simply can't. We should talk. Go to quotenow.biz and we'll start the conversation.
Today on the podcast, we have my friend Michael Scherer. Michael is the founder of Atlante Capital Group. He has over 30 years of operational experience across all functional areas of an organization and is an advisor to several organizations. Michael currently manages 6 assets in Metro Detroit and is an LP in several deals. Thanks for joining us, Michael. Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. Thanks, Gary. First of all, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's a real pleasure. You know, I've known you for a few years and that know, like, and trust factor. You're one of the people I enjoy investing with more than anyone. So thank you. A little bit about myself. So I grew up in the Metro Detroit area, did my undergrad there at the University of Detroit Mercy, and have been involved with the city and businesses in the city for a number of years. 10 years ago, I was called in to help the city prepare for the largest municipal bankruptcy on record, and was able to work with the city and the consultants that were working with the city to make those preparations. I had the fortune of writing the strategic plan for the planning and development department as it got restructured. Been investing in real estate for, gosh, probably the last 20 years, advising people, especially giving a lot of advice and not following it myself until recently. But I remember there was a time when somebody said, is now the time to invest in Detroit? And I'm going to tell you that we're probably 5 years past that time when I would say yes. I bleed Detroit's Red Wings red through and through. Big advocate of the city and a big fan of its new resurgence.
Well, I love what you're doing. I mean, to give listeners a background, you're based in SoCal. You invest in Detroit more as an operator. And what you're doing is really unique. So to talk about this fund and this plan that you're putting together to really help change the communities there.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it stems from the work that I did with the city 10 years back. I was involved with the planning development department, which also oversaw a lot of HUD funds coming from the federal government. There was something like $50 million of funds coming in that had to be dispersed out to city organizations. And so seeing how that was going to get the proposals, I guess, for where things were going to be in the next 5, 10, 20 years gave me a little bit of an advance notice as to, you know, where I should be looking as well. And within the last 5 years, you know, this is kind of when we got involved with some of your real estate deals. We were also looking at, you know, where and how to get involved with the city. My wife and I acquired 6 properties across the metro area. Primarily, you know, single family homes, duplexes, smaller scale things. And then we also invested with a larger group. I think it's the top 3 investment firms in the city. They've got over 2,000 units under management. So we're in a fund with them. The concept really was that as we were renting out our properties, we would get inquiries from different agencies, organizations, people who were otherwise having a difficult time getting a good, clean, safe, affordable place to live, somehow found us, right? And, you know, I'm proud to say that, you know, one good example is we have a family that's housed. They have an adult child who has cerebral palsy. And the only thing that we really had to do was ensure that we had a ramp installed and some railings installed. I mean, it was such a little investment on our side. They are great tenants. They checked all the boxes, you know, great financial background, everything passed. Right. The fact that they couldn't get housing was just one of those disturbing factors. So, you know, we were doing good. And there were a few other examples that came our way. So it was about 2 years ago, my wife and I decided that, you know, if we really want to do good at the scale we want to see across the city, we need to scale up our operations, which means we need to raise funds. You know, a half a dozen or so properties is great, but we really want to affect tens, if not hundreds of properties across the city. So that's where it came from, Gary. And, you know, it's a passion point of mine.
Yeah. I mean, anytime I talk to you, you're always talking about it and that passion like oozes through like your voice and your energy. And that's why I wanted to have you on because of that, you know, going back to where you grew up and affecting change, which is so powerful. Obviously, you're finding solutions for people that can't find housing. And why affordable housing? I know you worked with HUD and other things, but like, is there other reasons as well to go down that path?
Glad you asked that question. You know, affordable housing is maybe it's a little bit akin to the work you're doing with workforce housing, right? We see a lot of development in, and I'm just going to focus on Detroit for the moment because that's what we're talking about. You see a lot of development in the downtown area, midtown area, a lot of Class A developments, really beautiful high-end properties coming online, but that's only serving a small percent of the people who live in the city and the surroundings. So if you think of the people who actually work in your Amazon locations, your nurses, your everyday folk, right? Where are they living? Believe it or not, University of Michigan had put out a couple of studies in the last couple of years. The one that struck me the most was the one that suggested that there are over 37,000 units across the city, 37,000 households living in substandard housing. You know, you take that, if it's 2.5 people per household, that's 100,000 people. That's who we're serving. Right. You can't expect that somebody who's, you know, making an average living is going to be able to afford the $2,000, $3,000 a month rents in some of these new properties. Where are they able to find the $800, $900, $1,200 a month rents? So we've got a solid group of people to serve. There's a really solid stock of housing. The problem is that over the years, a lot of properties just kind of, you know, fell behind. And they've been mismanaged. There still are a number of owners who are out of state. And it's kind of that out of sight, out of mind, right? You see some of these properties and you wonder, well, who actually owns that? So we've created a system to figure out who those owners are. We have people driving the streets, looking for buildings that are boarded up or that have, you know, overgrown weeds or trees or whatever it may be. And we find the owners, we approach them with a reasonable offer. And we're actually making some good progress here. We just have our latest acquisition under contract this week for an upper lower flat, roughly 1500 square foot, 3-bed, 1-bath, beautiful building. And unfortunately, a few years ago, the owner lost it through tax foreclosure. It's been sitting vacant. I mean, actually, there is somebody living there, but that's another topic for another time. But the fact that we can find these properties in a relatively affordable way, we can renovate the properties. And so we keep the rents low. We keep the rents at market rate for the neighborhood, but we keep it from, you know, exploding into those multi-$1,000 a month opportunities that people see in other places. The other side of the equation, though, Gary, I think that this is a unique aspect of what we're doing is we have people who, you know, even though let's say our market rate may be $900 a month, we have people who can't afford $900 a month. You know, maybe $675, $650 is where they top out. Our team also works with these residents, whether they're living in the house when we buy it or we're finding agencies across the city. We'll work with people to put housing vouchers in place because the last thing we want to do is disrupt a neighborhood and push people out of the neighborhood. This is an inclusionary kind of an approach that, you know, really, I think gives us sort of that social aspect of it, a little bit more of a compassionate approach. Don't get me wrong, we're still making money, okay? We're able to provide a reasonable return to investors while doing good from the social side. And that unique balance is really what we're proving out here.
I say this time and time again to people, like there's money to be made in real estate, no matter what market, no matter what the economic conditions are. It's how you underwrite, how you bought the property, what kind of financing you put on, all these different factors. But there's certainly opportunity everywhere. It's just a matter of what you make of it and your niche and whatnot. And obviously providing affordable housing is so, so important across the nation. There's such a lack of it. And like you said, they're not building more of it. They're building Class A luxury apartments. And so the U.S. needs people like us that take older properties and fix them up. And, you know, it's not necessarily granite countertops or luxurious that we're improving it, but to a state that is of quality to a renter that they could feel proud of and that's affordable to them. So I love it.
Yeah. Similar minds for sure.
So how do you see this evolving longer term?
Thanks for asking that question too. You know, we're hyper-focused on a neighborhood in the city of Detroit. And my ultimate goal here is that, you know, we're raising $2.5 million, which to a West Coaster might not seem like a lot, but in the city of Detroit, I believe that we can positively impact 25 or more properties in some key neighborhoods that are adjacent to one another. If we can do that, I believe anybody can do that. And so if somebody has a desire to, you know, revamp the neighborhood where their grandparents were or the church they went to or some foundation, and they use that as kind of the cornerstone of their neighborhood, to be able to carry this program forward, I would love to find, say, five people in the city of Detroit who want to do what we're doing and do it in their neighborhood and teach them and coach them and give them the playbook and maybe even at some point bring some capital to help them. But I don't want to stop at Detroit either. I believe that we can do this, you know, I'm stealing a line from New York, right? If you can make it in Detroit, you can make it anywhere. If we can do this the right way and prove that we can teach other people how to do it, why not do the same thing across every city in America? This vision of addressing affordable housing and ultimately, you know, addressing homelessness, this is not going to happen in 5 years or 10 years. This is a 50-year vision. And the way that we get that done is to share that knowledge and share that wealth and help other people to lift up their markets as well.
Absolutely. I love it. What are the partners in the city that you're working with to help you move this forward? Because obviously, I mean, it takes a village, and you talked about, you know, your 10-year planning, and you've got to have some help. So curious what types of organizations?
You know, when I first started looking at which neighborhoods to invest in, I was guided by the fact that we can't be the first ones. We can't be the only ones in the neighborhood. If we're working on the buildings, but, you know, working on the houses, but nobody's working on the commercial, nobody's working on the park, like, it's going to fail, right? And again, this goes back to some of the work I did 10 years ago, which showed, you know, there are, let's say, 10 different economic zones within the city where there will be investments coming over the next 20 years. And you can start to see most of those are actually happening. So the neighborhoods that we selected range from, you know, 3,000 square foot, beautiful old homes down to your standard 800 square foot, wood-sided, small, you know, the price points are very different. The neighborhoods are very different. But if you think about how to track somebody through their progress in life, you can see them going from, you know, an apartment to a small house to a nicer house to a bigger house. And even as they work back through life, the same, you know, back into something that's more manageable. So they always have their friends nearby. They've got their church nearby. They've got their restaurants nearby. Like, everything should be right there in a pretty, you know, small walkable range, ideally. So again, we can't do this alone. We are providing the cornerstone of housing to provide that clean, safe, accessible housing in the neighborhood. But we're augmenting that with agencies that can help us put the right residents in place who ultimately will be owners of our properties in the time period where we decide to sell. We need to work with the churches in Detroit are so influential, so powerful, and because they reach the masses, right? They reach the people who live in these neighborhoods, right? So coordinating efforts with local churches is important. Understanding what the city is doing, of course, whether it be streetscaping, new parks, you know, fortunately, a lot of the infrastructure from lighting to city services have really picked up in the last 10 years post-bankruptcy. So we're not concerned about any particular neighborhood. It's more about, you know, what are all the forces that are coming together to make this work? And whatever we can't do, so as we grow, right, it's like building blocks. You know, we're doing the housing. Somebody else is doing another thing. Somebody else is doing another thing. If somebody needs help with food, if they need help with, you know, rehabilitation of some sort, if they need training, if they need education, I mean, you can see it. It basically follows Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Obviously, we're not going to provide all of those services. We need to work with other groups, and we are. We're starting this obviously leveraging every contact that we've got. Sometimes people will say, oh, I need to introduce you to so-and-so. And we'll say, well, let's hold on a minute. We're not quite there, right? That'll be next year's conversation. But the more we work toward this end goal, it's just interesting how many people are coming to the conversation and willing to participate. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah. It's very similar. When I was working in education years ago, they'd had these zones throughout the U.S. It wasn't many, but it was like it was all built around community to really impact that community. And, you know, school, church, all these different organizations, like you said, to come together to really uplift a community. And this is very similar. And it was a very impactful, very successful model.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the unique factors of Detroit, I found this when I was working with them 10 years back, but it still holds true. Everyone's rowing in the same direction. City council, state government, philanthropic organizations, for-profit, like everybody wants to see this thing succeed. It's cool. It's truly a magical place to be working.
Well, Michael, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing what you're doing. Very inspiring. If anyone out there wants to do this in Detroit, get involved, do it in another city, reach out to Michael. Michael, where can they find out more about you and your company?
Please visit us at atlantecapitalgroup.com, A-T-L-A-N-T-E, capitalgroup.com.
Awesome, awesome. Well, this is Gary Lipsky signing off. I'll be back next week with another informative episode on the Real Estate Investor Podcast.
To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you like this episode, please head over to iTunes or Stitcher and like, subscribe, and leave a review, as it will help us reach more people. And if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Break of Day Capital, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com and sign up for our newsletter and fill out our investor application. We'll talk to you next week.